makes for a short, short ride. Says he's got a fast boat. Talk about high speed. But everybody knows the truth. Oh, it's big boat. Get your oars back in the water, kid. Says he's got a fast boat, but it's just a fair.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Gar Alperovitz, who's a historian, political economist, activist, writer, and government official. He is currently a professor of political economy at the University of Maryland and is a former fellow at King's College, Cambridge University, Harvard's Institute for Politics, and a guest scholar at the Brookings Institution. He also served as a legislative director in the United States House of Representatives and the United States Senate, and as a special assistant in the Department of State. He's the co-founder of the Democracy Collaborative at the University of Maryland and a member of the board of directors of the New Economic Institute. His most recent book is America Beyond Capitalism, Reclaiming Our Wealth, Our Liberty, and Our Democracy. And he has an op-ed in Monday's New York Times, Wall Street is Too Big to Regulate. Welcome to Background Briefing, Gar Alperovitz.
Good to be with you.
And Wall Street may well be too big to regulate, but... your notion that maybe the solution is to nationalize them, I'm sure. Do you think Jamie Dimon is quaking in his boots?
Not at the moment. But, you know, what's really interesting is that I look back at some of the powerful thinkers of the most conservative doctrines at the Chicago School of Economics, and I was taking and applying their theories to the current situation. And number one was obviously the theory of regulatory capture. And the old Chicago School economists understood, as most people do when they're honest about it, that these big corporations of any kind, banks or other, they take over the regulators indirectly, they take over the congressional committees indirectly, so that after a while they are clothing their own policies with government regulations and government power. So you don't get much regulation. It's not a very fancy insight. I mean, anybody who's reading the paper or watching what's happening with regulation now understands this. But you have to be kind of blind not to. But they also were very interesting, and they said, you know, if you try to break them up, they regroup. The big fish eat the little fish, and you're right back where you started. Now, these are the free market economists I'm talking about. So if you can't regulate them, and if you can't break them up and keep them broken up, because they'll regroup and be back where you started, these old conservative economists said, well, in some cases, the only answer, literally, from a free market position, is to take them over and nationalize them and neutralize them so you can have free competition. Very interesting argument, I think correct in its basic dimensions, particularly if you apply it to the banks.
Well, indeed, the examples of when the antitrust when antitrust happened in the case of Standard Oil and more recently AT&T, as you point out, when they were broken up, they've essentially recombined a few decades later.
Yep, that's what happened, and it happens even more dramatically now because the financing situation of the banks allows them to leverage huge amounts of money so they can gobble up almost anything they want to. And once they get going, once they start accumulating, then they get more and more power, and they can take up the little guys, and there you are back where you started. So it's a wonderfully logical dilemma. If you can't regulate them, because they begin to influence the regulators in reality, and as I say, almost anyone in Washington, I live in Washington, and the lobbyists are swarming and outnumbering, you know, the regulators 10 to 1. They're very high-priced and very smart lobbyists that paid a lot of money. And the regulations have a lot of loopholes. That's the way you do it. And if they're going to regroup, the logic leads you to this wonderful conclusion from the conservative Chicago. These are Milton Friedman's teachers who are put this forward. These are not the left. You've got to neutralize them, and the only way to do that is nationalize them. So that's basically the argument I put forward in the New York Times, and I was glad to see that the Times ran the piece, and we're starting to get some debate going on it.
Well, there's no question, Gar Alperovitz, that the President Obama is in the kind of democratic liberal tradition, going back to FDR, Truman, Johnson, Clinton, and you know that they believe that you can regulate, and in fact, in Clinton's case, of course, he undid the centerpiece of regulation, which was Glass-Steagall, and yes. And essentially the problem is now surely that because of the line between investment banking and regular banking means that the investment bankers used to have their own skin in the game, and now they've got the money of all these poor hapless depositors that they profligately throw around and create monstrous problems like the 2008 almost near-death experience of the global economy, and then of course they are so, too big to fail, and then we have to rescue them.
Yeah, it's exactly what happens. But there's an interesting dimension. I was just talking a minute ago about the current regulatory process, but bringing up Clinton and what happened to Glass-Steagall, there's another dimension of the problem. Because the strong regulatory structures that we did have were put in place partly in the Progressive Era and above all in the New Deal. And in the post-war period, when there was a much stronger progressive politics and mainly backed up by labor unions, in all countries, the progressive politics has to have a strong labor component or it doesn't get anywhere. But labor has declined from 34% of the labor force being organized to a mere 7% in the private sector now. And I think we're seeing the reflection of that in just what you're talking about. So it wasn't only the abandoning Glass-Steagall, the division that prevented the divided between investment and ordinary banking. That went the ways, but airlines were deregulated, trucking was deregulated, basically the same situation is happening in cable television. So if you look around, there is a larger process of not administrative deregulation, but in this case, legislative deregulation, which reflects these underlying power relationships. There was an era long ago when you probably could regulate to a certain degree. That's long past, both because of the way they take over the regulators and because they write the laws in the new way that when the laws are written, you get deregulation of another kind. So we're in another era. And in a funny way, those old Chicago School conservative economists way back in the 30s, they had an insight into this that I don't think anybody has surpassed. And it's good to go back and read them and start applying the lessons, I think, to where we're going now. Otherwise, the logic of it is, and you know, I read this stuff pretty closely and know a lot of the financial analysts. I don't know anybody who doesn't believe we're going to have another financial crisis and because there's so many loopholes in the regulation. And when that happens, either the next one or the one after that, I think at some point the light bulb's going to go on and say, look, this is too important to leave to the banks themselves, and we can't regulate them. So somehow, the only option is probably the one these old Chicago School guys saw, which is to take them over, make them into public utilities, and stabilize the situation that they can cause too much damage the way they're now running.
Again, I'm speaking with Gary Alperovitz, who's a historian and political economist. He served as a legislative director in the United States House of Representatives and the United States Senate, and he's the co-founder of the Democracy Collaborative at the University of Maryland. And his most recent book is America Beyond Capitalism, Reclaiming Our Wealth, Our Liberty, and Our Democracy. And he has an op-ed in Monday's New York Times, Wall Street is Too Big to Regulate. So I got a little sidetracked there with Clinton and Glass-Steagall, but it's a very important point, and I'm glad you followed up on it. But I was going to say Obama, being a traditional Democratic Party liberal, he believes, obviously, that he can fix it, and he's got the Dodd-Frank law, but only one-third of that has been implemented. I mean, they're just nibbling that thing to death, the lobbyists. And we know that the banking lobby is about the most pervasive on Capitol Hill, second only probably to the NRA and the military-industrial complex. But
very, very, very well paid, very intelligent, very sophisticated. And the other piece of this is, you know, the people who are doing the regulation, you know, they're making government salaries. And they're kind of sitting opposite people who are making one, two, three, maybe 10 times what they're making. And they're thinking about their next job. And I'm not saying they're corrupt, but I'm saying there's a kind of subtle kind of implication in many of these cases that they may move on to better things in the future. And so it's a very, very, very kind of unreal world that they live in. aside from the fact that they're over, you know, they're understaffed, outgunned, too many people attacking them with different ideas all the time and different legal suits and challenges. So it's just not a viable way to manage a regulatory structure, and that's reality. It's not. I think pretty much anybody in Washington knows that's true, that the regulation is full of holes as a result. So the bottom line, we'll probably see another crisis. You know, household wealth lost $19 trillion in the last crisis. $19 trillion, not a billion. So the stakes are very, very high in all of this as to whether or not the regulations are put in place. We're not talking about minor issues. We're talking about the entire U.S. economy going down again when these people, blow it again with some speculative effort. So these are very important questions to get straight.
Well, it's interesting that that $19 billion was of wealth was lost essentially by the American middle class and by those aspiring to the middle class who are largely the victims of the subprime ripoff. Interesting enough, yesterday I was just talking about with the leading tax authority in the country, David K. Johnston, about the fact that $21 trillion of the wealth of the global elite is hidden in offshore tax havens, complete black hole, totally unproductive wealth. So there you have it. $19 trillion this is Robin Hood in reverse, isn't it? You take away $19 trillion from America's middle class, impoverish them. Meanwhile, $21 trillion is sitting offshore doing nothing for anybody except the rich.
Yeah, there's something's a building in terms of the sense that there's really something so fundamentally out of line here when people can, on the one hand, make so much money and on the other hand, cause so much damage. It gets beyond ideology in a sense. That's why, as I say, it's very interesting. These are not socialists calling for nationalization. These are the conservatives who taught Milton Friedman. In the interest of stabilizing the system and kind of getting rid of these extraordinary costs that are imposed on everybody else by virtue of the greed and malfeasance of these big corporations. So I think what you're saying and what's implicit in all this is as the economic pain gets deeper and the next go-round, I think people are going to be, left-right Tea Party as well as the Occupy people and a lot of people in the middle saying something new has got to be done. And one of the things we can look at is what these old conservative economists were saying. If you can't regulate them and you can't break them up, take them over, make them into public utilities. At least they'll be stable, and we need that stability.
But as you point out, though, in your article in the New York Times, Gar Albovitz, Wall Street is too big to regulate, that these old-school conservative economists were talking about banks back then. Now they're far more concentrated with the five biggest banks, J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, Citigroup, Wells Fargo, and Goldman Sachs. Their combined assets amounting to more than half of the nation's economy. So the other issue, of course, is the financialization of our economy, we have an economic model which is about extracting money, extracting wealth and not creating wealth, and that doesn't seem to be sustainable in the long term. But what you also point out is that nationalization, which of course makes people hysterical on the right, is actually not very difficult, and we tend to forget that we've already nationalized General Motors back in 2009. The government still owns the controlling shares of its stock, and we already nationalized American International Group, the largest world's largest insurance company. The government owns roughly 60% of that. So if it happens, it can happen with alacrity and ease, surely.
Yeah, and people do tend to forget. We nationalized two big auto companies because that was the only way to solve the problem. Unfortunately, we started giving them back, and we'll see if that will work. But, the government put in something the equivalent of 61% of the assets in some of the major banks, Bank of America, when we bailed them out. Yeah. And that could easily have been, that's what happened last time around, 61%. And it could easily have been voting stock instead of just giving it in away without taking control. And the same of Citigroup, it was, something like 88% of their capitalization, which the government put money in and then let them go free without control. So the de facto investments that the public has made could easily, had we wanted to, and turned into a voting stock. The banks were crawling on their knees. And
right, and now they're completely ungrateful. I thank you so much for joining us, Gaur Abovitz. I'm afraid we ran out of time, but I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Gaur Abovitz, who's a historian, political economist. He's served as a legislative director in the United States House of Representatives and the United States Senate, and was a special assistant to the Department of State. He's a co-founder of the Democracy Collaborative and on the board of the New Economic Institute. His latest book is America Beyond Capitalism, Reclaiming Our Wealth, Our Liberty, and Our Democracy. He has an article in Monday's New York Times, Wall Street is Too Big to Regulate. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. A quiet voice.